fighting for America.
The media market personality Marconi goes to Kevin Miller, KIDOAM, Boise, Idaho.
Fighting for Idaho.
I just want to say to all of you, thank you for believing in radio and local radio. I want to thank Town Square Media. I want to thank Kevin Godwin. I want to thank all my listeners.
Fighting for you.
But in reality, this award is about all of you that believe in radio, that believe in touching people's lives. God bless you all. Thank you.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, true believers. K. Miller in the Morning. Happy Friday. Y'all do want to thank you for joining us. Let's get right to it. We're talking about Ebola. We're talking about the crisis at the border. No one can talk about it with more competency, with more efficiency, with more passion than our great friend Bob Dane, joining us from the Federation for American Immigration Reform. We've known Bob for many, many years. He's known me in my past lives, and he joins us now. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Kevin. Congrats on the Marconi. You are the king of the electronic town hall, this shining prism of democracy. Talk radio. Love it.
Well, thank you, sir. And, you know, it's funny, when you and I connected a couple times, you go, hey, are you that Kevin Miller in Birmingham? And I said, yeah, that's me. Now in Boise. That was many years ago.
Good to have different perspectives.
It is. And you've been doing this a long time. How do you keep up the fight, considering the overwhelming politically correct muckety-muck that tries to overtake us in saying that we're a country without borders and let's just let everybody in?
Somebody asked me the other day what it's like working on this immigration issue, and I said it's like the Super Bowl. The stakes are high every day. The job is tough, and you get the you just get pounded. But you've got to get the ball over the line because we've got so much at stake here. Because immigration, you know, ultimately, unless we get a handle on immigration, it's an uphill battle for virtually every other social policy issue that we're trying to solve.
How has it changed for you since you've been at FAIR as far as the changing dynamics of immigration, immigration reform, and quite frankly, the amount of lies that politicians on both sides of the fence will tell about this?
You know, I'm guardedly optimistic right now, and anyone who knows me knows that I'm not a Pollyanna. I think Oscar the Grouch is a little more likely. But one of the big changes that I think we've seen in public opinion over the last year is, while Americans used to think of the illegal immigration issue as an abstract issue, oh, it's a problem in the other guy's backyard. You know, because of the recent surge of unaccompanied illegal alien minors this year, and the result being that HHS dumped about 60,000 of them in school districts across the country, that abstract problem now has become very tangible, because now it's in your backyard, on your doorstep, in your local school districts. So there's an increased awareness by the public of the cost and the impact of illegal immigration. Now, you know, that is not going to stop Obama, but it makes his job a lot tougher. And making his job a lot tougher is the funnest part of this job.
Well, let's start with the first one where they say Americans want immigration reform. Do Americans want immigration reform, or do they want the borders secure?
It depends how you ask the question. You and I both see all too often in the mainstream media, the question in the polls is one of two extremes. Do you prefer a mass deportation where we kick in doors in the middle of the night and separate mothers from screaming babies? Or would you prefer a path to citizenship? Deportation or amnesty? It's a forced choice. The choice, when asked properly, that most Americans consider fair, practical, and effective is, let's dry up the incentives that cause so many illegal aliens to come here and cause so many of them to remain here. And that's the availability of jobs primarily, but increasingly sanctuary city policies, in-state tuition, driver's licenses, a veritable honey pot of benefits. If you dry that stuff up, people leave of their own accord, self-attrition, self-deportation. Hey, you could just call it good old-fashioned going home. I think that is the policy position that we need, that most people support.
Well, it seems to me that we can't afford these programs. Yet in California, it's in-state tuition. Bob, you remember this in North Carolina before the banks collapsed. Bank of America actually had programs for people that were here illegally to get mortgages.
Oh, it's nutty. I mean, the cost of illegal immigration nationwide for 12 million illegal aliens who currently reside in the U.S., which, by the way, that number is going up, it's about $113 billion a year. It's not inevitable, and it is not necessary. You know, ultimately, really, we just need to enforce the laws already on the books, secure the border, enact worksite verification, let the states start participating in immigration enforcement, stop the states from refusing to cooperate with the federal authorities, and of course say no to amnesty. You know, let's protect our borders, a rule of law. Give the American worker and the taxpayer a fair shake. Why? Because immigration, and this is what most of our politicians forget, immigration is designed to serve our broad national interest. Every country on earth throughout all of history has approached it that way. This administration seems to think that immigration policy is one big fat Democrat voter drive. That's unacceptable.
What about the chamber? What's their role in this?
Chamber of Commerce, you know, that's been the other huge change this year. The Chamber of Commerce has, you know, the change has been very apparent. The public is increasingly negative towards the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Look, you know, capitalism, free enterprise, less regulation, low taxes, that's all great stuff. And I would say 2 years ago, maybe you disagree, but I would say 2 years ago, most Tea Party conservatives and a lot of talk hosts in the country were on the chamber bandwagon. But as we know now, the chamber has pushed hard and fast for massive increases in immigration and reduced wages. So supporting the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I don't think, is no longer a pro forma on this partisan checklist. It is an increasingly unpopular organization. They've got a PR problem on their hands, and that's just fine with me. Again, you know, nobody is indicting free enterprise and capitalism, but throwing the American worker under the bus begs the moral question of whose interest are you actually representing?
580KIDO, our friend Bob Dane with us from the Federation for Immigration Reform. Kevin Miller in the morning, American Immigration Reform. America, what did you remember the cover of Time magazine, Bob? Maybe it's 10 years ago. I thought it was less, where they called it a Mexico, where they have this just big issue where everybody was just one big country. Could that happen?
I remember that. Yeah, I that may have been in response to the Mexifornia book. Look, no country can have a rate of immigration that exceeds assimilation. And that's certainly one of the reasons that FAIR for 30 years has espoused some sensible limitations. Well, obviously, we're opposed to illegal immigration, but you've got to have some sensible limitations on legal immigration as well. I mean, take a, you know, we've already got 12 million illegal aliens residing in the country. We are issuing more visas than any other country on planet Earth. We issue more green cards, 1.5 million legal immigrants each and every year. We have nothing to apologize for, but we're having problems with assimilation, with language, cultural connectedness, and we've got to be very aware, again, you know, how is immigration serving our broad national interest? Education, health care, jobs, and wage stability. Those are all economic and cultural questions, and it begs the question of just exactly who are you bringing in, under what terms, and how much is enough.
Bob, let's take a look at the border. What's it like down there?
The border is turning increasingly from a migration point of garden variety illegal immigration, quote, the guy coming in who just wants to mow your lawn, to more of a paramilitary entry point. Border Patrol agents are not only outmanned, outgunned, but they're demoralized because they're under orders now with due priorities from the administration to simply catch and release anyone who comes in. Border fence has only about one-tenth of the border fence has been built. And, you know, look, we're now at the point where we not only have an enforcement crisis, a migration of illegal immigration, increasingly drug cartels and human trafficking, but now we're looking squarely into the face of a public health crisis.
Is it because the administration believes that we're, you know, whether we're talking about it here at 580KIDO or elsewhere, Bob, that, you know, we're more of, we have to be a good global citizen, whatever that means?
Oh, I think the administration is using immigration as a blunt political instrument.
And that is that you simply flood the market with millions and millions of poorly skilled, heavily government-dependent immigrants. You ultimately put them on a path to citizenship. And the danger there is that if left unchecked, we are looking at a really a one-party system in America. I mean, unless Congress stops this insanity, we're going to see a post-amnesty phase of America, Kevin, where we're not going to be having any debates about illegal immigration because all of the existing illegal aliens will have been given citizenship. The future flows will be irrelevant because the rule of law has been scrapped. The borders are open. American sovereignty is a thing of the past. And we'll lose all the controls that we have to regulate immigration. We'll be culturally balkanized, economically burdened. We'll have crushing entitlement debt. That'll make our current debt load seem like chump change.
Is there a tipping point where there's a backlash? Bob, you would know all about that, leading the resistance.
Hard to say. I mean, I think, again, the public has an increased sense of, you know, recent events. Of course, ISIS, we've got a heightened sense of national terrorism. There is a growing demand to secure our border, finally implement the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. The public has a better understanding of the executive power abuse. I mean, let's face it, Kevin, most Americans don't sit around thinking about the separation of powers and the usurpation of the congressional authority.
Right.
But interestingly, we're seeing a robust discussion of these issues occurring in the town square, especially on talk radio. That level of engagement is impressive. Tipping point, I think, is a great question. I think it occurs a couple of months out, because when, and this is no longer if, it's when the president pulls out his pen and does an executive action, giving a massive amnesty to 5, 6, 7 million illegal aliens, we move from an enforcement crisis to a full-blown constitutional crisis.
Bob, please stand by. More coming up with our great friend Bob Dane. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDL. Let's get you to work.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kate Millie in the morning, 580 KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Bob Dane joining us, Federation for American Immigration Reform. Bob, for people in Idaho that want to know more about what they can do to stop the illegals from coming in, to limit legal immigration, what can they do to help you?
You can certainly go to fairus.org, but it's a good question, Kevin. I think we've got one job to do, and that is to ask two simple questions of our candidates before this November's election. We've got to ask them, number one, if – and you got to ask from your senator down to the dog catcher, whoever is asking for your support, ask them two questions. If they support the president's proposed amnesty for illegal aliens – and second, if they would support cutting off money to fund it, oppose it, defund it, you know, and in so doing, you defend the Constitution, because ultimately, if the president is allowed to proceed, he's abusing his power, he's usurping Congress and violating the Constitution, and he's certainly not upholding his oath of office. So given those stakes, you know, I think those two questions are critical. And I don't think it's unreasonable for politicians who want our vote to answer those two important questions.
What do you make of the propaganda that we don't have enough qualified American workers? Jeff Sessions, Senator Sessions, one of the smartest guys that we know, makes the economic argument, rightfully so. But what do you say to some of these congressmen that have sold out to big business that we need a guest worker program because American kids are dummies, so we have to import the intellectual folks?
You know, it's odd. First of all, we were told for years and years that we needed illegal labor at the lower end of the labor scale to do janitorial and landscaping. Now we're told that at the high range, the STEM jobs, science, technology, engineering, and math, that somehow we don't have enough Americans to do those jobs. Well, that ought to be really interesting to any mom or dad who's just shelled out $100,000 to get their kid through a high-tech school, and now they're competing against foreign guest workers flooding the market from China, Pakistan, and India. You know, there's not enough Americans to do the work has never, ever been true. It's simply about employers not finding the employers they need at the wages they want to pay.
Bob Dane with us, 580 KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning Why the great betrayal of the American worker? Bob, you're a patriot. Heck, you could be making a lot more money doing something else, except, you know, instead of being in the Super Bowl every day and national sovereignty on the line with your private nonprofit group. Why the great betrayal of the American worker at the low end with NAFTA and at the high end now with the guest worker things? What's behind that, sir?
A lot of lies. For example, the bromide is that it provides cheap labor. Illegal immigration doesn't provide cheap labor, Kevin. It provides subsidized labor, and it's the Americans who are doing the subsidizing. We're losing almost $400 billion every year worth of wages due to the displacement by immigrants. And even if you factor in the contribution of immigrants, illegal immigrants I'm talking about, we're still losing about $350 billion annually. The ones who truly gain from illegal aliens in the workforce are business owners who cheat and hire illegal workers, not American workers. It's privatized gain. It is socialized loss.
Well, and we're not even talking about the crisis medically in the emergency rooms with this Obamacare. And let's hit you with another one here at 580KIDO. Educationally, our education system takes a beating because of it.
It does, and it took a another whack recently because the transfer of the recent surge of illegal aliens coming across the border this year, they went into the custody of HHS. They were then subsequently, over the past couple of months, transferred into local school districts all over the country at a cost of about $761 million, which in the scheme of things isn't a whole lot of money, but these were on anticipated costs at the local school districts, so it caught them at the last minute by surprise. And the problem is, in the U.S., the average of educating a child in K through 12 each year is about $10,000. But when you take an illegal alien who has very little formal education, no English proficiency, gosh, you know, a lot of them don't even have proficiency in their own in their native languages, that figure rises to about $20,000, almost twice the cost. So it's impacting U.S. students. And in a way, Kevin, the glut of illegal immigration into our public school systems is really inhibiting any meaningful progress we need to make on our U.S. educational system. Again, you know, what are we doing with immigration? Is it helping or is it hindering education, healthcare, jobs, environment, our cultural connectedness, et cetera?
Bob, final thought. What about ISIS at the border?
I think we've got to come to the realization that the port of entry on the southern border is no longer just illegal immigration. We've got a couple of realities. We've got to finish the border fence. We've got to have a better exit system in place. We've gotten pretty good at knowing who's coming in. We don't know who's leaving. We've got to acknowledge that we've got terrorist organizations operating in this hemisphere. They are coming in. You've got the Islamic State, the Shiite militia, Al-Shabaab, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram. You might even have Boko Haram in there for all I know. I'll tell you this, according to the Heritage Foundation, as of a couple of weeks ago, there have been 53 attempted terrorist attacks since 2001. Almost every one of them was perpetrated by a person who came here legally or illegally through our front door from a region of the world that clearly represents a security threat. We are not out of the woods.
Bob Dane, if people want to get involved with your group, what can they do?
It is fairus.org.
Bob, hey, thank you for the nice comments and everything aside. Thank you for what you do. I know it's a tough gig that you have, and you've been there for many, many years, so thank you, sir.
Thanks, Kevin.
Bob Dane joining us from the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Kevin Miller in the morning. Hey, coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, something very special today. We've got two political activists. We have our political correspondent, Dustin Cook, will join us. He's going to give us the read from the establishment part of the party. And then on the other hand, we have China Gum joining us to give us the read from the grassroots part of the party. Can the Republican Party be united concerning, well, a lot of issues? I think the person that benefits the most from this same-sex, this gay marriage wedding decision is Governor Otter. I'll explain it to you next. Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Hi-de-ho, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. There was a big debate last night in Idaho Falls between Governor Otter, John Bujak, and A.J. Belukov.
City Club of Idaho Falls sponsored an important debate between Governor Butch Otter and his Democratic challenger, A.J. Belukov, and Libertarian candidate John Bujak was in the audience. One question that was very timely was their stand on same-sex marriage, and here are their responses.
In 2006, Idaho looked at it and we said, we're going to change our constitution. And they asked the people of Idaho to go to the polls and vote for a constitutional amendment, Article 3, Section 28 of the state constitution, to define legal marriage in Idaho as a union between one man and one woman. And from that, all of the detractors, and probably including the author of that question, feels that Idaho is all of a sudden anti-gay, that we're anti something. We are not. Idaho is pro-traditional marriage, and I'm not going to do anything to put that in danger.
No matter how many of our citizens vote to pass the law, we cannot pass the law that violates the United States Constitution. This is about discrimination, treating all people with fairness and respect. Regardless of what our belief may be, we still need to treat them equally.
I'm a Christian, and I believe in traditional marriage. But I also believe that people have constitutional rights in this country to believe differently from me, a First Amendment right to believe different religious beliefs or to say things different from what I believe. I also believe they have a constitutional right under the 14th Amendment to equal protection under the law. So when I look at this issue of gay marriage, it's no surprise to me that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has reversed the decision of Idaho citizens in defining what is going to be traditional marriage in Idaho as between one woman and one man.
The entire City Club debate will be aired on the Now channel.
There we have it. And if you're in Idaho Falls, you can check out the Now channel. Kevin Miller in the Morning at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So does this impact your vote? Does this impact how you feel the idea that same-sex marriage is being fought between the state of Idaho and the federal government? Now, as we've talked about earlier at 580-5436, we have the media that is against us. We have people in talk radio that are against us because they don't want to touch these controversial issues. But I think A.J. Belukov hit it off, hit the nail in the head when he said, I disagree with it. My political view is this. This is the law. However, I believe that the governor should fight. And I believe in his heart of hearts that Governor Otter believes in the marriage between a man and a woman. And it's kind of like the war. You can't be, well, I'm pro-troops, but I'm against such and such. You're all in. And the governor, whose conservative credentials have been questioned by his constituents here as he runs for re-election, is reestablishing his conservative credentials. And I think somebody, whether it's in politics with Governor Otter, whether it's in talk radio with Kevin Miller, whether it's at the courts, someone has to say, enough. We will debate you. We will have dialogue. We will do it with respect, but enough. And I see this all the time, and I write about it at 580KIDO. I guess the headline should have been, Today I'm a Bigot, because I disagree with same-sex marriage. I'm sorry, today, quote-unquote, I by popular terms, I guess I'm a homophobe because I don't believe that marriage should be redefined. And if you've ever noticed, when you get into a discussion with people that are pro-gay marriage, what do? They get emotional. They start losing it. Liberals logically cannot debate this issue. They can't. They lose it. I've seen it with my coworkers. I've seen it with people that come up to me and start yapping at me. Do I have anything against people that choose a different lifestyle or have a different lifestyle than me? No. But I don't want to be it shoved at me. Take a look at our major television outlets. What was the lead story the past couple days? Hello, everybody. We're at the Ada County Courthouse talking to a table. The table's not saying anything, but we expect the table to be filled with coffee and donuts coming up soon. Why? Because the Supreme Court probably will not hear the Ninth Circuit's ruling concerning the appeal of the Ninth Circuit's ruling concerning same-sex marriage in Idaho. So we have Billy and Tim and Adam and Steve and everybody else that are going to get married. And then the faux tears, the fake tears where everybody's crying and whining because they couldn't get married. Heck, even with straight couples, marriage is a thing of the past. Everybody lives in sin. What they're doing is making a statement redefining marriage. That's all this is. And soon, it's going to be, you can have traditional marriage, same-sex marriage, polygamous marriage. There are no standards. Society, tell me where in Western, Eastern, in world civilization, you've had a society that has succeeded, that has endorsed same-sex marriage. Historically, I can't see it. Politically, this helps the governor. I've been in Tampa Bay where the governor has been attacked by gay activists. I saw it firsthand. And I think the governor should appeal and appeal and appeal until there is nothing left. And they will call Governor Otter names because they cannot debate the issue logically. They have called me names. They will seek to get me fired. And here's an indictment of our national talk show hosts on this station and others. How many of them ever take up the topic of gay marriage? Glenn may joke about it with Stu and Pat, but what's his views? Where's Sean Hannity's views? They're great. But you know why? You avoid those controversial things if you want to stay employed. That's how it is. And that's sad in America, where we should have an honest, respectful debate, not a local, national media that is promoting an agenda. I challenge the media outlets, the print and the broadcast, where was the other side? Where were the people that call into this program that say, I'm against this? Where was the opposition? Talk about complicity. We go to Gene in CUNA at 580KIDO with Kevin Miller. Hello, Gene.
Good morning, my brother. You know, it's getting terrible when your screener says, well, hello, Gene. He knows my name just by the sound of my voice when I'm talking to him. And you know,
you're not going to get that anywhere else there, buddy.
Yeah.
We appreciate you.
Yeah, well, I love you guys, too. I really do. You know, if these people with the alternative lifestyle, I've talked to a number of them. They say, well, I was born that way. No, you were not born that way. Now, if you would have been born with a little bit of each and not enough of neither, then I could see where you'd have a real dilemma. But these people don't have a dilemma. What they do is they have a, shall we call it, what is it? Rebellion. There we go. They have a rebellion against everything. They want things their way, period. They seem like, to me, that they're the only ones that have rights. They're the only ones that want their voices heard. And heaven forbid if you or I or anybody else stands up and say, no, you can't have your voice to be the only one heard. That's not a democracy. Well, then we need to make it so that we only have our voices heard. I spent some time in San Diego when I was in boot camp, and the alternative lifestyles were just starting to come out of the closet then. And you know, my friend, they are a very violent bunch. They had some marches going on, and not too long ago, I believe Fox News, it's been probably a year ago now, but Fox News reported on some of this stuff where they were having a march in San Francisco, and some of our Christian friends were there, and the alternative lifestyle people come up, started breaking the signs of the Christians, started pushing them around, started hugging and kissing each other, and fondling each other right on national television, and the media did nothing about it. They did not bleep it out. They did not, you know, how they use that fog or that whatever it is to, so you don't see what they're doing. I'm not sure what they call it, but they didn't bother to X any of it out. They let it go on like it was, but yet every time the Christians wanted to do something, they would bleep out what they were saying, or they would fog out their hand gestures, or when they would lift their hands and praise the Father for something.
It's very simply, Gina, bias, and we see that in our local media, because we've had not one of them take a look at what you're saying, what Tom Munns is saying, what anybody's saying. I mean, that's unfortunate. Gene, I got to run, but thank you.
Okay, my friend. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye. Our great friend Gene in CUNA, 43 degrees in Meridian. Kevin Miller in the morning. The time now, 6:49. Let's get you to work.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO. You know, if you voted for the president and you're a Democrat, wouldn't you be proud of this? Well, Alison Lundgren, who's running for the Senate in Kentucky, was asked a simple question.
For President Obama, 2008, 2012.
You know, this election, it isn't about the president. It's about making sure we put Kentuckians back to work.
Did you vote for it?
I was actually in a way a delegate for Hillary Clinton, and I think that Kentuckians know I'm a Clinton Democrat through and through. I respect the sanctity of the ballot box, and I know that the members of this editorial board do as well.
So you're not going to answer?
Again, I don't think that the president is on the ballot as much as Mitch McConnell might want him to be. It's my name, and it's going to be me who's holding him accountable for the failed decisions and votes that he has made against the people of Kentucky.
Right. Did you vote for President Obama? Simple question. Tom Munns joins us now. Kevin Miller, 580KIDO, TomMunns.com. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Kevin. I just wanted to call and encourage you and tell you that I'm glad that you're on the radio, and I'm glad you're my brother. And you may get hammered, but, you know, when you're right, you're righteous, and you just got to keep staying the course.
What do you make of this and how this impacts the gubernatorial race? We really haven't had you sound off at all concerning the race for governor.
Well, I think I actually stated sort of my preemptory position. I think it was the fact that it was interesting that Governor Otter is in this position because he of his stance against Common Core and health care when he threw his hands up and said, well, the Supreme Court has ruled. Well, we won't go into that. You know how I am about that. But the interesting thing about this case is that if he actually stands against this, then he actually, you know, in what do they call interposition as Federalist 16 states with the ability just to be able to ignore a federal ruling simply because they don't have any enforcement mechanism to make that happen. And so if he actually does that and he stands on the 10th Amendment, then he could have done so with Common Core and health care. So either way, he's going to be deceiving the people, I think. And so...
Well, hold on. Explain that to us, because you've made a point that no one else has made before, comparing gay marriage to the health exchange to Common Core. You know, simply in about 30 seconds, just kind of give us the in-depth background.
Well, the governor, if I understand what you're asking, the governor is in a position where he's kind of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't.
Well, the governor has said that he's going to appeal it to the Supreme Court.
Okay, well, why didn't he do that with the – did he do that with the Obamacare and Common Core?
He did do that with Obamacare. They lost, and he said, well, we're done. Well,
and then the other question that's beyond that is, you know, he has a tremendous understanding of constitutional law and American history. He knows that the Supreme Court is not the supreme arbiter of the rights of man or the states. So he has, like I mentioned before, Federalist 16 mentioned specifically interposition – and the state's ability to just simply deny any order given by any court, which they don't have the authority to give. See, that was part of the checks and balances that retained the state sovereignty when the governor of a particular state, if they believed that the ruling was unconstitutional, they did not have to act on it.
Well, I think that ended with the Civil War and the Civil Rights Movement.
That's exactly right, and that's really kind of where we're headed, you know.
All right, Tom Munns, quickly, we've got Dustin, the political correspondent, versus China, the grassroots champion. Who are you going with next hour? I know what you're going to say. Why don't you have me in there, Kevin?
Yeah, why don't you have me in there, Kevin? No, wait, that's Ronnie from Caldwell. I'm sorry.
Some would say that you are Ronnie from Caldwell.
Hey, I just want everybody to read Matthew 19:5. For this reason, man shall leave his father and mother and be joined with his wife.
What does that have to do with Dustin and China?
Because you were talking about the gays earlier, and I thought it was a biblical scripture.
I'm glad you answered the question. Thank you.
Hey, have a great day.
Our great friend Tom Munns. Check him out, Tom Munns, Facebook, Munns Tom Twitter, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 43 in Nampa. Let's get you to work safe. Coming up next, a new segment, The Battle of the Politicos, Dustin versus China. Hit me with your best shot, and we'd like to hear from you as well. Kevin Miller, good morning. Serving.